Welcome to Drinks Insider, the podcast that's interested in everything you can drink. If it's legal, if you can sell it, and more importantly, if you can make money from it, then we're going to talk about it. So come on this journey into the commercial world of everything drinkable. I'm your host, Felicity Carter, and you're listening to Drinks Insider. One million bottles in its first year. How's that for a sales figure? I first heard about Zoncello in Australia in late 2023 at a wine conference. People were talking about the downturn in wine sales, but also about this wine spritz that was bucking the trend. Was it ever? Launched by Zonzo Estate in the Yarra Valley in early 2023, this blend of limoncello and prosecco continues to take the country by storm. It sold a million bottles in its first year, and now it's also a success in the very difficult-to-crack Chinese market. Zoncello is the brainchild of founder Rod McAuliffe, an electrician turned sommelier who has a knack for creating drinks that people can't get enough of. Today, his spritz business has grown so big he's had to spin it off into its own company. So why did Zoncello become the it drink of summer? Price point, alcohol level, timing, and the post-lockdown Australia longing for European summer in a glass. In this wide-ranging interview, Rod talks innovation and the cash flow problems that inevitably happen when a product blows up, and also what it's like dealing with the inevitable copycats. A note for non-Australians, the ATO he refers to is the Australian Taxation Office, while please note that the Prosecco he uses is Australian, as producers in Australia are allowed to use the name. And don't forget to sign up for the Drinks Insider newsletter at drinksinsider.com. Rod, great to see you. Okay, first question. What took you from being an electrician to working as a sommelier?
Well, it was always a dream of mine to be in a kitchen, actually. I wanted, when I wanted to leave school, I wanted to become a chef. So I couldn't seem to get an apprenticeship doing that, but I did get my second choice, which was being an electrician. So, yeah, it was always going to be the fact that I was going to chase my true love and end up in restaurants.
Okay, that is so strange. What did you go through to get rejected from being a chef? Did you like have to do some cooking and they just threw you out, or what went wrong?
Well, no, nothing went wrong. It was just that, you know, chefs, the timing of shifts for, you know, chef apprenticeships was difficult for me on public transport, so it just wasn't going to work.
Oh, okay, right.
So I chose to do the electrical, which was, you know, the simple 7 till 3:30, a lot easier to get to and from work because I was living, you know, out of the city, which, you know, took a while to commute. So, yeah, that was the main purpose.
That's,
yeah, so the first ever job I had in a restaurant was actually for myself, was when I started my own restaurant.
Was this the one that was on what is now Zonzo Estate?
No, this was called E-Lounge and it was in Abbotsford and, yeah, it became quite a famous pizzeria in Melbourne.
Okay, so because you were working at a restaurant and then one day, 2015, I think, you just ended up buying the estate. How did that happen?
Well, yeah, well, you know, once I got started at E-Lounge, I fell in love with the restaurant industry like I knew I would. And I wanted to create a family dining experience in the country because, much like in Italy, to find good food, you'd leave the city areas and travel to the country where you'd get, you know, maybe nonna cooking in the kitchen or the proper Casalinga or home style food. So I thought I wanted to replicate that in Melbourne. So I went off trying to find a property to do that, and in 2007 discovered what was then Train Track Winery in Yarra Glen. And, you know, signed a lease for a shed. It was an old milking shed. And, you know, in the middle of a property with no infrastructure, no driveway, no adequate power or any such things. And anyway, proceeded to, you know, 2 years, then we opened, anyway, opened Zonzo in 2007. And, as a restaurant. And then the 2015, what had happened at that stage was, the owners of the property, the owner, Gloria, she was getting on in age and she wanted to sell the property, and that's when I purchased the property and established Zonzo State Winery.
Okay, and so I've read that you've actually got quite a lot of Italian varieties there, like Fiano and Pecorino. For listeners, the Yarra Valley is very famous for Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. So why did you choose to go in a different direction?
Yeah, well, we've only just recently planted those, so they have been in the ground for 2 years now. We decided to go down that track because we are an Italian restaurant here at Zonzo State, and you know, we love all things Italian. We just wanted to play around a little bit with Italian varieties, and with Caroline Mooney, our head winemaker, you know, we had a lot of discussions about maybe a little bit of climate change. We are sort of heating up. Mm. It is getting more difficult to grow great Pinot and Chardonnay grapes in the Yarra Valley because it is heating, like it is getting hotter and hotter in summer. So we started looking at different varieties that perhaps could be, well, a little easier to grow but also thrive in this environment that we have. And, so obviously naturally we looked at Italian varieties and we've put them in now. I believe we've got the Yarra Valley's first Fiano and Pecorino planted. So we've also got Barbera, Nebbiolo, Sangiovese, and that's it, I think, anyway. We've got those ones planted. So I look forward to getting first vintage. We might get a little bit of fruit this year out of those.
So, of course, what you're really famous for is some of your innovation. So can you tell me about was Bellina the first one you started with, or had you been tinkering with lots of spritzers and wine cocktails earlier than that?
Well, yeah, Bellina was the first one in bottle for us. Coming from the restaurant side of the drinks industry, yeah, playing like with drinks behind the bar and seeing what's popular has been a great advantage to our business, and that's where we can get a lot of our inspiration from. But the Bellini, or we call it Bellina, which means beautiful one in Italian, started because it's my wife's favourite drink. So I thought, why not bottle that and surprise her? I didn't tell her that was coming, and I just bought a bottle home when it was finished. And I thought that was just a nice little thing. But obviously Bellini was not our invention by any means. Obviously it came from Harry's Bar in Venice, but it was Australia's first bottled Bellini.
And then from what I understand, everybody started making one. I read somewhere that there were suddenly 12 Bellinis on the market. So is that true?
Well, look, I don't know about their numbers, but there were many, so absolutely.
Yeah, is it annoying?
Well, I suppose a little in some regards, yes, but I do understand it. I mean, you know, when something's going so well and you know, it hits the mark and you know, it's making a bit of noise, it's natural for some businesses just to jump on a so-called bandwagon and try and follow along. But yeah, it's not really annoying. I mean, for me personally, I think if the products are good, I think it's good for the category. You know, yeah. I think if they become inferior products, then they do sort of hurt the category a little bit because people can be turned away from, I tried a Bellini once and it was terrible, I don't want to try it again perhaps. But if they're good products, I think, look, it just adds, and, you know, that's just business in the end of the day. We can't, unfortunately, be the owners of a good idea.
So the reason I wanted to speak to you today was Zonzo, this drink that's taken Australia by storm. I understand that in its first year it did something like a million cases. Is that right?
A million bottles, yeah. So
a million bottles.
Zoncello, our limoncello spritz, which was an innovation that we created, and it took a while to get that to market. It did. You know, when we first decided to make this limoncello, we started teasing it out through socials that we were making a limoncello, and I never once mentioned we were making a spritz. I wanted to surprise the consumers with that. That was going to be the unexpected. And I think that hit the mark because then they're like, oh, we're expecting a limoncello but not this spritz. What's this spritz? So that, that was quite a hit from the start, and it did sell over a million bottles in its first 12 months.
So what I read was that you were peeling the lemons for the limoncello and suddenly thought, why don't I add Prosecco? Is that right? How did the idea come about?
Yeah, well, that is pretty much right. I was peeling lemons late one night and I thought, well, I think I should make this into a spritz, like a pre-bottled limoncello spritz. And I thought, surely this has been done before, like as a premix. And, yeah, our research, we researched it for, like, yeah, well, a very long time, but no one had done it. There was no can, there was no bottle, there was no anything. And I thought, surely not, but it was the case. No one had actually gone off and bottled a limoncello spritz before. So we took this idea.
So, you know, the limoncello spritz is everywhere in Europe this summer. You know, my local Aldi in Germany is selling a whole range of make-it-yourself spritzes. And so it's interesting how much the trend has. You came along at a time when the trend was clearly ready to go to take off.
Okay, so when we created it, there was a question firstly for us about taxation. So this was a difficult one because we needed to be profitable, we needed to, in Australia, to fall under what they call wet tax or wine equalisation tax. And what we were doing was we were mixing a spirit with a you know, with a wine, and we went to the ATO and said, well, how do we want to fall under the wet tax category? What do we have to do that? And there was a lot of to and fro there, and we had to reach certain percentages of products to be able to be a wine product. So that was the first hurdle. We did get past that. And then from there, we decided to take it to market. And it was launched on the 23rd of February in 2023. And we just launched it here at the restaurant. We did a small little launch party. And in September, it was in Dan Murphy's, which is a national retailer in Australia.
And so when did you get a sense that this was going to really start flying? Was it the reaction of the people in the restaurant?
Well, funny you say that. Because, yeah, I think so. Yeah, like, I mean, when we make these products, we got the fortune of having so much of our demographic that we reach working in the restaurant. And, you know, we gave them some samples to try and they all kept saying, when's this going to be released? I want to buy some. I want to show my friends. So that was a good indication. And the other part was, you know, we went to Dan Murphy's, and normally what happens in this scenario is you get what they call local ranging, so they might give you 13 stores to begin with, and then we get to, if we do well in those, they'll give us an extra few, and then you might eventually get a whole state like Victoria and so on, and it takes a while to become like nationally ranged. But what happened with this product was it went into about, it went local ranging, it went Victoria like within a few weeks, and then it was national within like a month. So it was huge. And I mean, the orders were incredible. And, you know, then we obviously had to grow extremely rapidly.
Right. So this is the position, this is the point at which many entrepreneurs find things get really difficult because you have to pay for all of the cost of goods before you actually get the money back. So how do you scale something rapidly from making it yourself to now making a national product?
Yeah, that's a great question. That would be by far the biggest challenge we had in this whole Zoncello crazy project. It was that it was growing so rapidly that cash flow was difficult. The major retailers, you know, they do take a while to pay. So
yeah,
we needed to fund a lot of stock, you know, early. So, you know, I did try and go to a bank about that. They were very slow, actually, pretty slow in coming to the party there. So, you know, I had to back myself basically. So I just bit the bullet and said, rightio, we're going to get this done. I went, I saw my bottle supplies, stickers, corks and muselets. I created favourable trading terms that we could achieve, you know, with the delays in payment. And we pushed ahead. So it was something that I'd never done before. It wasn't, you know, second nature to me at all. I mean, we were, you know, getting invoices for glass bottles of upwards of $1 million at a time. And, you know, I'd never ordered anything where I hadn't had the money in the bank before, you know, but this is what we did. And, you know, it was with terms, so we understood we were going to sell them. But nonetheless, it was a new part of business that I had to get used to.
Was this stressful or was this exciting or both?
Look, I didn't feel a lot of stress because it was just so exciting. You know, the team, our team here, we picked up and ran with it, and we didn't give up. We just kept going. We found ways to constantly try and keep up with production. We did run out. It's not like we didn't. The fact is, we ran out on months at a time. And that was difficult because we're understanding we're losing a lot of sales, and, you know, no one in business really wants to lose sales. But I think it sort of worked to our advantage too, because people at that stage with the limoncello spritz, no one had done it before, so they hadn't come in and created any dupe products yet. So we were the only ones. So, you know, it really created a hype when people couldn't find it. So, you know, we did run out. However, it was so exciting, and it was just a time that I think we really enjoyed, you know, and I really appreciate my team for stepping up and getting it done.
So, I mean, Australia doesn't have that much Prosecco. How did you source enough Prosecco to keep the brand going? And also, where did you get the lemons from?
Okay, well, that's a great question. Prosecco was no problem. Prosecco, there's plenty of Prosecco around, so that was pretty achievable. Lemons, on the other hand, I think we zapped every lemon out of Victoria that we possibly could. And there was a funny story where we had a lemon grower in Mildura or thereabouts that I rang him and I said, I want to buy your whole orchard worth of lemons, you know, I'll buy the whole season's worth. And he said, I've got to meet you. I want to do this deal in person. So flew to Mildura, you know, signed a contract on the back of his car and bought his whole year's worth of lemon production. So that was one funny story, and that was good. But, another one was I came to the office one day when we couldn't get lemons, and I said, surely if we could get everyone's lemons off their trees at home, we'd have plenty of lemons, because lemons just go to waste in everyone's backyard. So we created what we did on World Limoncello Day, which is like mid-June in Australia. We decided to do the lemon exchange program, and it's such a hit. We've done it for the second year this year, but we probably in the first year, I believe we got about 1.5 tons of lemons from our guests coming into the restaurant. So if they bring lemons, basically we give them bottles of limoncello spritz. So
oh, that's hilarious! That's so funny.
And that
so
was how many, just a bit of fun for the customers as well.
How many lemons in one bottle? Like, how fair is this exchange?
Oh, we made it very fair. We made it quite attractive. We were giving them a bottle for every 3 kilos, so we made sure that they were winning. So everyone was very pleased.
That's amazing. And so how do you process that many lemons? Are you all standing around the table at midnight just endlessly peeling? Like, how do you make it happen with that kind of tonnage of lemons?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we do. We've got a bench and we stand there. We've got six peeling machines, which you do have to load manually. I found that they were giving us the greatest quality of lemon peel. And, and we sit there and we just keep peeling lemons.
That's hilarious. So did you ever end up making a limoncello, or was that just forgotten about?
Oh, absolutely. No, we do make limoncello. No, that's that is also in major retailers, and we do move quite a bit of our traditional limoncello. But that's how the whole recipe starts. So we do always have to make the base limoncello and then blend it with the Prosecco after that.
Okay, I want to go back to this tax story. So can you explain what the wine equalisation tax is and why you wanted to be eligible for it?
Well, the wine equalisation tax is a taxation in Australia on sold wine products, and basically it comes in at about half, if not maybe maybe not half now because, you know, taxes has changed, but it comes in at a great deal less than excise does. And excise is the tax that's charged on spirits. And because we were blending the two, I really wanted to be in the lower tax bracket, not the higher one, because otherwise we wouldn't really be commercially viable. We wouldn't have given – I wanted to bring in this product at $25 Australian, and if we had the excise on top, it would have been over $30. So I really wanted to become a product that was classified as a wine.
And how did the Australian Taxation Office react when you rang them up and said, what's this? I mean, did they have meetings about it? Were there accountants involved? I mean, how did they work out what the ratio was supposed to be? Or is there already a form that they just flick through and go, it's got to be 75%?
No, there wasn't anything at all. There was we reached agreements initially, and then this was really difficult. this was a staggering towards our launch date, because at about a week before we were about to launch, they changed their mind and they said, no, we don't agree anymore. And, you know, our first batch was ready, which was quite devastating to us. But anyway, you know, we could have gone down legal action and done all the things, but, like, at the end of the day, there's no use battling, a government agency. I think we just better conform. So they gave us some new parameters to work within, which was extremely hard. And I couldn't get the product to taste like I wanted it to and actually meet those parameters. So I was almost at this stage of giving up. And then a couple more months went by and I was like, oh, I don't know if I can do this. It's just not tasting good and I'm not happy. And then, one funny thing happened. I was in Coles or Woolies or something, I don't know, and I saw a zero alcohol Prosecco, you know, and I thought, hold on a minute, this could help me here because this is going to bring down the alcohol content and I might be able to reach the percentages. So I bought a bottle. And I went home and I mixed it up and I played around just with some, you know, things, and I thought, you know what, I've got this. This is what we're going to do. So that's what we ended up doing. So the original thing was thrown out, and we went back to the drawing board and we went under this new method, and the ATO was happy, and then we could proceed. That taxation is now called vegetable wine. That's the actual
vegetable wine.
That's what it's called. So. Yeah, I don't know why, but that's what it's called. Yeah.
Do you know when I was doing some research about you, I was asking ChatGPT to go and find sources, and it actually told me the vegetable wine story, and I thought that was ChatGPT hallucinating. I actually didn't believe it. So your wine is a vegetable wine. Okay, cool.
Yeah, but it's no vegetables, but that's that's the ATO's name for it.
That is very funny. So where do you get the de-alcoholized Prosecco from? Do you de-alcoholize yourself or through a plant, or do you just buy it as it is?
No, we buy it as is and then de-alc. But we only de-alc a percentage to reach the percentages we have to hit. But, yes, we de-alc.
So I guess in some ways, first of all, that would bring down the overall alcohol level and make it a bit more refreshing. But secondly, that's a moat as well. I mean, that must have stopped competitors from jumping on the opportunity straight away because you knew what the tax situation was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did. I mean, now there's so many dupe products of this. I dare say, look, I'm not saying this to be mean in any way at all, but I dare say the other products don't have any limoncello whatsoever. But anyway, that's my personal opinion on taste. But I think, it is a difficult product to re-engineer. It is quite a beautiful product. That's probably why it sits at the top of the spritz category.
That's so interesting. So when I was in Australia many years ago and I was writing for The Age, I did a story on limoncello. And one of the things I discovered is that limoncello in Australia is still made with lemons, whereas often in Italy it's made with flavour. It's not made, you know, that the Australian style of limoncello can actually be more authentic than what you get in Italy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, I think the way of the world is that, it's pretty simple to go to some flavour house and create something out of thin air, you know, or not, obviously not out of natural products. So, yeah, that may very well be the case, but I'm not aware of that, but it may be the case, yeah.
Does this put a cap on how much you can produce? I mean, or are there people in the Riverland busy planting lemon trees?
Well, I wish I had planted lemon trees because I think we need them. But it doesn't really put a cap now. We've got like fruit contracts in place. We're well and truly placed. We're ahead of production because one of the other things was obviously with this great growth became really, really problematic forecasting. We couldn't forecast, you know, and it was through no one's real, you know, fault, obviously, but when we were trying to work on a 13-week average and we were in 13 weeks, we were doubling the double that we had the 13 weeks before, and it was just impossible to forecast. But I think now that we are relatively stabilized and we understand the market, I think, quite well, I think we're well on top of production now. And well, I think we are. This is going to be our third summer, and I'm hoping this summer, well, as much as I hope not to run out of stock, it's probably not a bad thing if we do. But I'd like to think that we are sort of, found our feet to say that we're on top of our scheduling now.
So from an operational point of view, you're a winery with a restaurant. You've got, you know, interesting varieties going into the ground and so on. And now you've got this thing that must have taken you 24 hours a day working on it. How do you maintain the rest of your business while you've got this product that is taking up all of your time and attention?
You know, it's a great question because I think, you know, it did take all of my time. There is absolutely no doubt. It was burning the candle at both ends, and I struggled to keep up with that. However, we have a long-standing dedicated team, and I've got some people in my corner that are exceptional at what they do, and you know they held the pieces together. You know, because quite often I will go from one project to the next, and they're always, you know, making sure everything's working well in the background. But you know, we do so many weddings here on site. We've got, you know, a really, really busy restaurant, and it was challenging. And obviously then we've got the farm to run, but yeah, everything's well managed. We've got the right people in place, and I could enjoy this time of let's say chaos quite happily, knowing that everything else was under control.
So when you go to a national retailer like Dan Murphy's, how much say do they get in the product and the marketing and the packaging? Or did you go to them, they taste it on the bench, they go, yep, how much can you give us? How does it work with a national retailer?
Yeah, interesting because, like, well, normally what we do is they have a, you know, new product development. You would show them that. You would show them what you've created, and then they will decide if they are interested or not. And then normally you would get, you would say, okay, your product's going to be ranged. And, you know, what we have had in the past was a local ranging, and in this area was around 13-odd stores. Do well in those, then you maybe go to 40, 50, then you might go all of Victoria, and then you start eventually maybe getting one state at a time. So that's how that sort of normally works. With Zoncello, it started selling so well in the stores we were given initially. It just ramped up. I think it went local ranging, all of Victoria, and then just national, like pretty quickly, within like 2 months.
That's amazing. So what's your volume now? If in year one it was 1 million bottles, what is it in year three?
Well, year three now, we're forecasting this year for like between 3 to 3.5 million bottles for the Australian market. And we are now like international as well, and so that doesn't include like our offshore business, which is still only just beginning. So, you know, we haven't really forecasted that yet. We'll just see how that pans out.
All right, so tell me about that. Did somebody approach you, or did you say this is really working, we should export it?
With China, someone approached us about exporting to China, and they've been that's Pacific Trading Alliance. They've been amazing to work with, and that's hit the mark there really quickly. So we it was like they were getting a container every like 3 weeks or something. So that's really hit the mark well. They said it's quite incredible that Zoncello, as a new category entrant in China, was given like, I don't know how they put it over there, but there's a supermarket called Fresh Hippo, which is the Alibaba chain of supermarkets. And it got ranged in every single store, so it was over 500 stores in China, and it went in straight away. And, you know, the guys I deal with there said that doesn't happen, and we're extremely fortunate for that to happen, so they believe in the product. And it's been moving really well there. Within 3 weeks in that system, in that Alibaba chain of supermarkets or Fresh Hippo, we became the top-selling sparkling wine in their stores.
That's amazing. Does this have a halo effect on the rest of your products? So that you do your other wines sell really well because of this one, or does it just sit by itself?
No, it does. It definitely has a halo effect. I think we've seen the impact through the whole business, through the restaurant and people coming here going, I had to see where Zoncello started, and, you know, they really just embrace the brand. And we have seen increase in sales in all of our other products.
So how are you going to stay ahead of the competition? You know, because they say it's not your competitors you have to worry about, it's your imitators.
Yeah, I've never heard that one, but I do like that. I think for us, you know, they were bothering me a lot at the start. I was pretty frustrated with it because I felt that, you know, the imitators were coming in, not spending any money on marketing, not really driving the category the right way with inferior products and branding. But they're here to stay, and that's just the way it is. And I spoke to a friend of mine who, you know, is I don't know, I just like to speak to, and he's very wise. And he said, no, Rod, you know, don't you worry about them. He said, you just worry about what you're doing, and you keep, you know, developing products, and you show them that they need to keep chasing you, you know. And I think he was quite right there. But I think how we stay ahead, regardless of what they're doing, is by cohesive branding. I think that is one thing that is extremely important. I think what's happening now with the spritz category, it's quite, I suppose it's so fresh and it's finding its feet. And what I'm finding is that wineries have got a spritz product. So they're saying, I'm a winery, but I've got a side little project and it's a spritz. But they haven't really dived headfirst in saying, this is actually a category and I'm a spritz business. And that's what we are doing. So we are a winery, yes, but we are separating the fact that we have a spritz business. And I think being cohesive in those brands, because we've now got Zoncello, Limoncello Spritz, we've got the Bellina, and we've got Ciccio, which is pistachio spritz. And we've got a new one, if you want to talk about that in a minute, that we're about to launch. But, you know, the cohesive branding of all these, and it makes it, I think, you know, it's what the consumer wants. They understand the product. They understand the brand. It's not just a tack on to an established winery of many years.
So tell me about these other products. How did you develop them? And, well, just tell me the story.
Well, I just like being in the lab. I don't know. I'm not a scientist, but I just love it. I love going in our winery and being in the lab and just, you know, playing around. And, so we developed a new product. So it's an aperitivo spritz. It's called Roro Aperitivo. And it's a gorgeous product. It's so beautiful. It's probably our best tasting product in my opinion and in many of my team's opinion. And this is about to be launched at Dan Murphy's and BWS on the 13th of October. This product's quite unique to us because we took this for a tasting and showed the Dan Murphy's team or the Endeavour Group team. We got comments like, oh, this is the most exciting MPD we've had all year. And they came back to us and gave us national ranging straight away. They gave us the top 50 BWS stores, and they gave us a first order for that product of over $1 million. So it was, it's just incredible.
You're going to have to explain what it is.
Yes, it's an aperitivo. So Italian aperitivos are basically a pre-dinner liqueur or spirit that just helps your appetite, so helps you get ready for a big meal, just like a limoncello is a digestive liqueur, so after a meal. But when these things are in a spritz form, they take on a life of their own. So basically then they're an anytime drink.
But what are the ingredients? Like what is it?
Okay, so the ingredients, well, if I gave you that, I'd give too much away. However, I give
What style is it?
There's grapes in, yeah, so there's grapes involved. It's like a bittersweet, if you could imagine, for those that have had maybe a Montenegro or a Puntames or Cina. It's sort of along those sort of lines. Or if to bring it closer to home, maybe like Canotto as well, those sort of citrusy flavors. So there's citrus, there's herbs, there's grapes. It's our own blend of beautiful things.
I was just thinking, if you've got another drink that has citrus flavors in it, are you at risk of running out of lemons?
Oh no, this is orange. So oranges seem to be a lot easier to get. So, but no, this is orange. Yeah.
Do you go to the same suppliers? Do you go? We've got all of your lemons now. Now we want that side of the orchard.
Yeah, well, if they're growing it, absolutely. Yeah, some of them do grow both. So, yeah, but a lot of lemon ones are strictly lemon. But orange growers, like in Australia, there's Griffith, and there's just so many oranges there. There's plenty to get.
Right. Okay, so, and tell me about the pistachio one.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting one. You know, I actually made some of this last night, so that's always a bit of fun. So the pistachio one is, it's a little bit of a cult favourite, you know. When we take it to tastings and events, it seems to be the first one to sell out every time. I think it's because it's surprisingly good and people probably don't want to risk their cash at the shelf without a tasting. But when we do tastings, it's extremely successful and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And that was a drink that was inspired by, you know, just really proving the fact that we are out to really make a difference in this spritz category. I think, you know, coming up with flavors that people would never sort of be, gutsy enough to try, you know, in business and actually put it out there, because that one was a hard sell even to my team. I told them I want to do this and they didn't really agree with it, but it does taste good. So,
what was the impetus for that? I'm just thinking about Dubai Chocolate, which has really launched a pistachio craze. Did you do your drink independently of that, or did you look at the trend and go, maybe there's room for a pistachio drink?
I know it was before that, the pistachio drink, before Dubai Chocolate. But I think for me it was as simple as, you know, at home, my little one, she's obsessed with pistachios, and we have a bowl on the kitchen bench at all times. And she sits there with her little fingers peeling them. And I one day I thought, well, why I want to try and make something out of this, and like pistachios. And that's when I took some pistachios to the lab and I started playing around with that. So,
you know, all of your competitors are now going to be watching your daughter, looking at what she's eating, thinking that's going to be the next drink.
Yeah.
Do you have an actual lab, or is this just the word you use for the kitchen you experiment in?
No, we have a lab in our winery.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so what have you tried that's been a disaster? What are the things that you thought were going to be awesome and then you took them to the lab and they sucked?
Well, that pistachio one, that's probably the greatest one, because I made that and it was terrible. And then I put it back on the shelf and I left it there, and I couldn't get it right. Like I made a pistachio liqueur and then I blend it with Prosecco and it was terrible. And I put it away, and then anyway, I went back to it. I think I went back to about 12 months later, and then I'm like, no, I've got to get this right, you know. And I was inspired then by not so much more Italian things. I was inspired by more Middle Eastern, and I thought, well, right, pistachio and rose water and honey, right, yeah, they seem to work well in desserts. So then I played around with a little bit of rose water and honey in along with the liqueur and the Prosecco and knocked it out of the park. It was amazing. But, yeah, that was one, for example. But you know, sometimes things just take a little bit more time.
Okay. I'm just wondering what other fruits and vegetables you've got in your garden that might end up being a spritz. So what do you drink for pleasure when you're not in the lab or you're not working?
Well, I don't drink all that much, you know. I probably should in the industry, but I don't drink much. But usually if I'm going to enjoy a drink, I love a nice champagne or a glass of red wine. Yeah. Obviously I love our spritz too, absolutely. But if I'm out at dinner, it's usually, yeah, a glass of champagne and a glass of red, you know. But if I'm like barbecue or having a bit more of a chill time, I think, one of the spritz products, they just seem to just be relaxing and fun.
So final question. Actually, I'll probably come up with a couple more questions, but you said that you were going to be a dedicated spritz company. So in business terms, have you spun off a spritz company or is it all part of Zonzo?
Well, I love that you asked that question because I was hoping that you would because I wanted to talk about a new venture. And we're building a home for Zoncello, and that's going to be open in 2 weeks from now. So it's going to be open on October 2nd, and it's a beautiful restaurant called Zoncello. But it's our house. We're sort of, you know, the offering is sort of house of innovation. So basically all these ideas that we come up with for spritz products, we will trial them there. So anyone that's lucky enough to be there might get a spritz that hasn't been released yet. We can start getting some feedback, see if people are enjoying it, and then probably see if we want to continue any further with that product. But so that's an amazing new feat for us. I just thought that, you know, given the success of Zoncello and its fame, I just had to honour that. And I'm really happy that we have. It's a beautiful venue. It's quite large, and I think it's going to be quite a draw card for the brand as well.
Fantastic. All right, final thoughts. What's next? I mean, it's a stupid question because you just told me what's next, but are you going to just keep developing more and more spritzers?
Well, yeah, I think, look, I don't know. I like that question because I always wonder what's next too. I think I'm not sort of like just completely tied into spritz. Maybe there might be a few other things to come. But, yeah, like, you know, I do want to absolutely be a vital part in the Australian spritz culture, and I want to ensure that it sticks around. And I think that it's a beautiful way to consume alcohol. You know, it's fun, it's refreshing. You don't have to be over the top with it. It's quite enjoyable. And I think that, so I will continue to drive the spritz category, but I don't want to make things just for the sake of it and come up with, you know, like, I don't know, a strawberry spritz or something. I do not want to do that. I think for me, unless it's going to be unique and somewhat a first, I probably will veer away from that. But I'll definitely continue doing some spritz, but I have got now interest in some other categories that may or may not exist yet, but, you know, that'll come in the future.
Oh, don't leave us hanging. All right. But, look, thank you very much for your time, Rod. That's a really exciting story to listen to.
Thank you, Felicity. It's been great joining you today.
You've been listening to Drinks Insider, the podcast that explores the intersection of beverages and commerce. Now, if you would like a summary of this episode, sign up for the Drinks Insider newsletter, which sends you the takeaways. Just go to drinksinsider.com and add your name. And if there's something you think we should be talking about, drop me a line at felicity@drinksinsider.com. And before you go, please don't forget to rate this podcast. 5 stars are most welcome. Thank you.